This is George Skivington. You're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 33 of series 4 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Russ Brooks, Lawrence Landry and Jim Harley this week. Snowy's on his way back from Devon?
He ran in Exmoor.
Devon's Exmoor's Devon. Yeah, we'll go with Devon. Thank God that's over. That's, I think, really the first line of this pod this week. The season has ended for Gloucester, and it's been pretty much an unmitigated disaster. A few high points, and we will talk about this in a season review part one, in the second part of the pod. But we will also discuss the Gloucester Bristol game, and I think let's be open and honest about it. Russ didn't see it. Loz, myself, and Jim, through varying reasons, saw about 60 minutes of it. I don't think we need to see the last 20 minutes of it live because it pretty much summed up the rest of the season generally. But anyway, Gloucester lost to Bristol. I think, is that 7 on a row now we've lost? 8 in a row? And it was pretty unedifying. Very poor start again. We were somehow in the game at half-time, despite being so poor. But the second half, Bristol scored a couple more tries and blew us away. And frustratingly, neither Bristol or Gloucester got in the Champions Cup. Bath did, which I didn't think I'd be saying 5 weeks ago. So fair play to Bath. Jim, we'll start with you and me, and then I'll come on to Loz, and then Russ will add his 2 pence of just whatever he wants to bring into the conversation of misery. Jim, I thought the first 20 minutes particularly were a pretty damning indictment of the season and performance by the team. It was just awful, really, wasn't it?
It was poor. It wasn't particularly bad decision-making. It was just the same decision-making we've had all season, which... It was really noticeable, actually, against a team like Bristol that love the offloading game. We don't seem to do that. And when we do it, we execute it poorly and aren't really expecting it. So that you get those knock-ons and such. But if you want to ignite our back three, then actually getting them some good ball. I think you mentioned it during the game, Ed, about counter-attack ball. And a couple of good opportunities for counter-attack appeared, and rather than looking up and going, oh yeah, we've got a chance here, there's a back row and a second row or whatever in the line there, just revert to type and kick it. And no, Lawrence, it's not that exciting. I think we are just totally lacking in that X factor that I really did think with some of our players we should have. Something that maybe Bristol had in abundance a season or so ago, and maybe has started to come back into the game. As soon as they get a little bit of confidence, then that X factor sort of returns. And unfortunately, Gloucester have got very little in the way of confidence at the moment. So, not good.
No, I mean, to be fair, on the X-Factor front, the ironic thing is, of course, that was the last game for pretty much all of the X-Factor players Bristol have got.
Yeah.
So that's quite entertaining, really. It's just the fact that they've played all season without those players, really. Most of them have been injured most of the season. And then they get them back for the last couple of weeks, play really well, but a little bit too late. Loz?
Yeah, I don't think that's a good Bristol side. They've got a couple of outstanding players, which you just said, which are leaving. But the reason we were still in the game after the first 20 minutes was because it's not a particularly great Bristol side. We did one real decent move and scored a try from it. It was the only real rugby we pretty much played in the first half, as you said, because we revert to the type of kicking the ball away. We go from one extreme to the other. It seems at times we go from kicking the ball too much to then not kicking it when it needs to be done as well, and just trying and when the game breaks down and we lose absolutely any resemblance of structure that we had for some reason. And given the fact of how structural a game Skivington wants us to play, it is quite alarming at times how we can open up so much. And Bristol are probably one of those teams where you want to be more structured than not, because they love just the game breaking down completely, with, especially well, with the players they got, they had. What they'll be like going forward, I don't know. You know, they've gone, looks like they're going for a bit more of a balanced squad rather than loading it up with five or six worldies and a load of club players. It looks like they might be trying to balance the squad out a little bit more across the board, but that's for another day. Gloucester, I'm just, well, you hit nail on the head. It's just a good job the bloody season's finished, to be honest with you, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the Jim referenced it about the sort of panic. And I'll come to Russ more generally about this point. I think we've kind of touched on this throughout the season, but there were at least three occasions, maybe four occasions in the first half an hour particularly, where we actually won the ball. We turned the ball over a lot, certainly first half. Some really good work at breakdown by a lot of the players. And actually, I think that was one of the small positives, I should say, was the breakdown. But when we won the ball, it was just utter panic. We just didn't know what to do with the ball. There was one where I think the right decision was Hastings fairly early on, where we cleared the ball, kicked the ball, and I think if it had been Reece Samit on the wing rather than May, we might have got something out of it. But I think, Russ, do you think the lack of a, I mean, we've kind of touched on whether an attack coach would have made much of a difference, but do you think the lack of an attack coach is probably the prime reason for that sort of mild panic every time we get the ball from a turnover?
I don't know. It's so hard to know. All I know is it's funny listening to all the comments, because I didn't see a single bit of the game because I just didn't have the energy to do it. I knew I couldn't watch it live. Unfortunately, fortunately in this case, I heard the score and I was just like, I just can't do this. I just cannot watch that game, because I'm pretty sure I'll listen into the podcast if I don't attend, and I will hear the same criticisms, complaints, gripes, observations of every game. And sure enough, I haven't seen a single minute of that game, but I have a real clear picture of how that game played out, and it's exactly the same as the others. Yes, an attack coach obviously will play an element to our attack like that, but I still think our overall game plan is not dictated to by our attack coach. And the evidence of that is we don't have an attack coach, but we have this game plan that we're playing. So until we put some trust in the players to play heads up rugby and open it up and give them that backing, nothing's going to change. We've had this conversation. I sound like I'm sick of fucking making the same point I always make. We could have the best nine in the world, but as long as we keep box kicking that game the way we do, it's an absolute waste of time. And I think the comment I made, I think we all made this, that La Rochelle game was absolutely amazing to see and gave us so much hope. But what mattered with that game is what happened afterwards. What happened afterwards is we didn't win a game. We had a couple of nice moments and we finished 10th. That game feels a long time ago to me already. And it's just a flash in the pan, isn't it? And it's this horrible, horrible glimpse. It's like watching Bullseye back in the 80s of here's what you could have won. That's the side we could be, and that's the side we won't be. And somewhere in a parallel universe, there's a happy Russ who gets to watch that side play. Instead, I'm stuck being the miserable fucker I am. And I know I'm always frustrated. I'm really frustrated with it. I'm just really fed up. And I just worry if we bring an attack coach in, unless there's some give and take, what's the point? What will we achieve unless we open up our game in general?
Yeah, I mean, Loz, we've mentioned this before as well about the fact that the there's not much point having an attack coach when you kick the ball away. I would say that it seems since La Rochelle we have tried to mix the game up a bit more, but the execution has been pretty average at best. I mean, we do create a lot of chances. I mean, Newcastle game particularly, think about the number of chances that we created. Do you think an attack coach is going to have any benefit if we are, as it does seem, we are changing the game plan a little bit? We are moving away from just a box kicking machine. Do you think that's going to have? I mean, I think there's talk about Skivington saying that we've got the smallest coaching group in the league or something.
Yeah, as long as we're going to play a bit of rugby, then attack coach will have. I thought we had an attack coach in Tim Taylor, personally. Once Alex King left, he took back over again, got the reins. You do get the feeling that Alex King went, well, what's the point of me being here? Because we don't do any any attacking. We'll just get them all away. But that's by the by. Look, I remember we lost the game where we played quite a bit of rugby in earlier in the season. Mm. And Skivington turned around and said that was his fault for he thought the team were ready to evolve and they clearly weren't. And we went super negative with it and literally kicked everything again after that. And it just meant, oh, we got bitten once trying to play rugby. That's it. We can't do that anymore. And we got to revert to type. And it's just so frustrating. Then all of a sudden it's, well, we can't play that against La Rochelle, so we'll play some rugby. And we took the reigning European champions and current European finalists right to the wire, almost beat them on their own patch. And he's gone, well, actually, there might be a little bit in it. So we'll try a bit of a hot pot of both. And what I do not quite understand is how professional rugby players have to be dictated to and be switched on quite so much, that they're not intelligent enough to realise whether it's on or whether it isn't. Surely the best way to play rugby is heads up, see what's going on. If it's on, go for it. If it isn't, don't. And have an offloading game, because you can't really stop that. And if you play... I've never been a massive fan of having too much structure in the game, because I think it's too easy to defend. If you haven't got a clue what someone's going to do. I don't mean play hair and scare and rugby like we did under Johan Hakkinen, but I can see why it is effective, because you just don't know what a team's going to do. Are they going to run? Are they going to kick? How can they set up for Gloucester? We all know what they're going to do. They're going to have probably one, maybe two phases of carrying, get to a position where they then, so they're just outside the 22, so they then can't kick direct for touch, and box kick it up and chase it. And they're going to do that. I say just that because it just frustrates me when we take the ball outside the 22 and then kick the bloody thing when we could have kicked it straight into touch direct from being in the 22. But they'll do that no matter where they are on the pitch, unless they're in the 22.
I think that's... And
then there's a kick usually comes in at some stage anyway, but at least it's usually an attacking kick rather than just a general, well, this is the only way we can get the ball at the pitch is to kick it.
I think that's my frustration, Loz, as well. It's like you said, it's like, I'm all for pragmatic rugby at the right times. And like you said, that comes from the players assessing what's on the pitch and making the right decision. Sometimes the right decision is to put the fucking thing up the field and get it out and secure some field position and put some pressure on. What annoys me is, like you said, it's so predictable. We all know we're going to do two or three phases and then you see the lads line up and that box kick's coming in.
And it comes very, very easy to defend.
Yeah, because
you're
just
doing the same
back.
Thing. The players are ready for it.
And it's not hard to have the back line be lined up to a guess. I know how we played under Cipriani, we can't do that to that level. But I think I've made this point to you, Ed, before. There would be times where Danny Cipriani had the ball, you'd have three or four runners, and you had no idea who the ball was going to. And it would be must have been terrifying for the defence. And every now and then he'd go, no, it's not on, pull it back, and someone else would kick it. There's got to be an in-between between three phases, box kick, and that complete, like, loss of care and scare.
Like you said, there was only one person who knew who was getting the ball in that situation, and that was Cipriani. And even Cipriani didn't know who was getting the ball until a split second before he let go of the ball, because he made that decision based on live play. And every single player was a realistic option. They all knew they had a good chance of getting the ball.
Well, he used to say, you run in space and I'll put you in.
I know, it's a novel approach.
We don't have any players running any lines. I mean, our back line will maybe once or twice in the game actually run onto the pass. They just catch it standing still and then go into contact. The likes of Ackerman, who's still making dominant hits, even though he's from a standing start, time after time after time, you just think, for God's sake, run onto the ball and you are going to absolutely demolish defenders.
But and I think part of that is the game plan, though, Jim. I think Ed's made this point, is like they don't want to make too big a yards, because if they bust up the field, Meehan's got to trundle up there to get there to set up for the box kick. They're all so ingrained in it. The one that frustrates me, and this is not just about Gloucester, it's professional players in general, is when you hear them go, oh, he ran that line and he was going to catch the ball, but he knocked it on because he didn't want the ball. So here's a novel approach. Even if you're running a dummy line, expect to get the ball, because it makes it all the more convincing that you're going to get it. And that should be the approach. So if you're going to run a line, believe you're going to get the ball.
Because like I said, you're line if you're not line. If you're not an option to receive the ball and your hands aren't ready and all the rest of it, then defenders are good enough at this level to go, well, they're not getting the ball, and not worry about you.
Yeah.
So you're not exactly coming up with revolutionary stuff here,
I know.
We were being taught that at bloody shitty Doughty level.
I know, this is not this is not me pulling out my game plan of secret history and actually revealing that I'm one of the greatest coaches ever. This is Neil Roberts. I know exactly. I learned from Neil Roberts at Doughty. It was not hard, was it? I mean, you know, that's all we're asking is just have a bit of variety, not our three phases bloody box kick. I mean, even we knew that. We would occasionally go, right, you're going to pick and go for three phases and then look to go right. But every now and then you'd be like, well, that went out the window because Loza saw a big gap and he's picked and fucking gone. You know, it just feels like we lack that. Because I mean, like, it's so sad.
sorry for having the goal to actually play what was in front of me.
But that's what I mean. No one, you know... The reason, and I'll bring it back to a serious point, and the reason why you say is like, it doesn't feel like, why are they not making that decision? I think it's fear. I think it's so ingrained in them that they're going to get a bollock. It's really simple, isn't it? Like, oh, you're not following the game plan. There's a bench over there and I'll find generic fullback number 563 who will follow the game plan. That's the only reason I can think of, is that it's that ingrained in them that this is what the game plan is and here's the repercussions.
I think that there's two aspects to it. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with Mark Atkinson a few weeks ago where he was referencing the fact that the lack of leaders, who are vocal leaders, I should say, who are on the pitch, at the pitch. I think that he was referencing Adam Hastings as someone who is a bit of a vocal leader, but people you might expect to be aren't necessarily vocal leaders. They're more doers, like people like Harris. You'd expect to be a big leader. He is, but it's a case of, look what I'm doing, not what I'm saying type of thing. You know, people have got to be comfortable in those situations.
Follow me through this brick wall that I'm going
to
run through.
Exactly. And actually, to be fair, I mean, one thing I would say, in attack at times on Saturday, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, actually, we have created a lot of holes. We created a lot of chances. To Jim's point, I agree, forwards don't tend to run on the ball off great lines. But I think we've seen Seb, certainly since Hastings' return, actually, I should say, Seb Atkinson is picking some great lines off him, making a load of yardage. The problem is, though, I think, and this goes back to these wider points, that because we played most of the season in this really constrained game plan, I totally agree with you, Loz, here. You expect players to be able to get your heads up and play what's in front of you, and you know they should all be able to catch a ball and should be able to pick a line. But if you've played your entire season on a really constrained game plan, and then with 2 weeks to go, you've got to suddenly go, oh, I've got to pick off the shoulder off some, I've got to pick a shoulder line off Seb Atkinson, who's going to be running this line. You might have only done it three or four times in training for the whole season. It isn't your natural ingrained game plan. I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this really frustrating point where we're getting actually a little bit more exciting rugby being played, but then it all falls apart because we're not used to it. And I know I can hear people screaming at the on the radio or however they listen to the podcast. You know, they should be able to do that, but it's not as simple as that. You have to realise that you've got game plans. That means your players are in different parts of the pitch to where they probably would be if they were playing a more attacking game plan. You know, Bristol, for example, for a lot of the season, haven't played the way they played on Saturday. They've been very poor. And actually, on Saturday, it was interesting. They were basically sending a runner up the middle with a support line. And then the idea was smash us off the ball, quick ball, go. That's why we turned the ball over so much, because actually Gloucester kind of almost read a lot of that and were turning the ball over. The problem was we then compounded it by making stupid mistakes. We were not being particularly accurate at the breakdown and giving penalties away, which meant Bristol could pop into the corner and go from there. So there's all these different aspects of it. I think we can't sugarcoat it. It's been Saturday was about a pretty average performance. We got thumped, really. 36-21, I think, final score, wasn't it? And it
Corlo was flattering. Thanks for that late penalty.
Late penalty try.
Thankfully, one thing I did do is I'm pretty certain I'm right on this, that wasn't the reason why Bath got in ahead of Bristol. I think they already had enough points, thankfully. Yes. But that would have been absolutely gutting. That Barnsley gives us a penalty try in the 82nd minute or whatever it was. I only just happened to look back and find out, and it causes Bath to get in instead of Bristol. Let's be fair. I don't overly like either side, but I know which one I prefer. To qualify for the Champions League, the Champions Cup, if I've got to make a decision, you turn around and you said, right, which one out of these two you have to give a decision? It is not, and it ain't going to be Bath.
I think it was, whatever you look at that result, it was always difficult for us when you knew Bath's last game was against a Saris side who, as soon as they qualify, they have previous for sending their select 15 presidential invitational.
That's what I said, said before, wasn't it? You know, I think when we last recorded, I mentioned, although I wasn't involved in that one, but the time before, I'd said that that's what happened on the last game of the season. Yeah. And I mentioned it in our group chat as well, which, as Russ just said, they did to us last year. And that's why we put 50 points on them.
Just to sort of talk about this as a moving on to maybe the a bit of a season review or kind of a general thought on this. I asked on Twitter if people were to send in 3-word reviews of Gloucester rugby season.
Is that like beep beep beep?
Well, I did say keep it clean, and for the most clean, part, it does look like they have. So here we go. Give examples. Desperately disappointing again, Lexi Young. Tom decent then dreadful. Hazy down, deeper and down. Keith Kenneth Flitt, which we know. It's the hope. Nibsy, another false dawn. Alex Stevens, same old Gloucester. Ryan, hotels in Oyonnax. Glad that's over. Trip to Poe, Ryan. Keeping it clean's a tough ask. Not very good. That was from Tom Morris. Nige Carpenter, tits up again. Owen, lack of consistency. Mark Johnson, hope then despair. I mean, it really is bleak at times, isn't it? I don't agree with this one, but I understand why people might be thinking this. Andrew Green, heads must roll.
I don't agree.
No, I can understand. Look, there's always a kind of a sharp response to disappointing seasons. I think the fact that, you know, if we were genuinely there was relegation and we were genuinely in a battle for that, I think there would have been probably a change made. But the fact we don't have promotion and relegation does mean that there's no real need to sack a coach unless it's you're looking at it and going, well, look, we want to be here in a 5-year plan and we're nowhere near it. That seems to be the only reason.
The thing is for me is I'm going to contradict this completely when we do the review, probably, because all I'm going to do is moan about how shite we are. But but there have been seeds, there have been shoots there that have given me enough that if they can just get it right, perhaps a little bit of help for Skibbs on the coaching, with another coach, a backs coach or a tack coach, whatever phrase you want to use, to put a bit more in it, a fresh look on things as well. Without, you know, the Tim Taylor's been doing it for quite a while now, so there's something new, someone new in. I think there's been enough at times that could really, really go somewhere. La Rochelle, for example, the way we played out there, if we could play like that every week, then we'd be going somewhere and we'd be near the top four without a shadow of a doubt.
I think I
cited last season we didn't get in the top four because of the draw at London Irish where we had 17% possession or something like that. We've had games where we've been similar because we kicked the ball away too much this season. We're not top four because we've been we weren't there. We've just not been good enough. Something's happened. It's gone completely fallen apart, as we said. But there have been times where ripping it up and starting again, that's the Gloucester thing to do after 2-3 seasons, not give someone a decent period of time in charge. He has shown that he can potentially get us somewhere. Changing it, for me, I don't agree.
I think if we're having this conversation 6 or 7 games into next season and we haven't had a good start after, for all the reasons you said, Loz, because there is, it's from next year, he's had long enough, it's his squad. And the main thing for me is you cannot ignore. So my three-word season review would be box kick apathy. So if George Skivington cannot look at that and that La Rochelle game and go, something needs to change, he doesn't deserve to be a director of rugby, does he? So he has
head coach, isn't he?
Well, whatever the bloody title is.
Person responsible for picking the team.
Yeah, if he hasn't gone, I need help, here's an attached coach. If nothing has changed by then and we are still languishing, I think he's got a lot of problems then. Right now, we've got to see what he does with the players he's brought in. It's his squad now. He's had long enough. Something's got to happen over the summer. That's where I'm at with it.
That's the really important thing, isn't it? You've got to give a coach time. And I think we've done that now.
So yeah, that's my thoughts exactly, Jim.
Christmas heads might roll.
Next season's massive for him, isn't it? Let's be honest.
The thing is, all the time, I know it's so stupid and I don't want, and this isn't acceptable to just keep on being rubbish like we are now, but all the time there's no relegation, there is no real threat to it. If he is building something, even if it's slowly, then let him continue to build.
That's fine.
If we finish where Newcastle are, it isn't costing us at the moment, apart from the fact that a bit of bragging rights, but we're the only team that's not finished bottom. Quite frankly, if there's no relegation, who gives a flying do that?
I think the only caveat to that is if anyone from that coaching staff comes out and says the words "trust the process," they should be sacked on the spot. Because
no, they should be shot.
Yeah. Okay, let's go there. They should be shot. Because my other three-word review was at least not ninth. That's the kind of where we are. But they've got to look at where they are on borrowed time, aren't they? I think they can't say trust the process. They've got to deliver quickly. Next year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the next season is an interesting one because obviously the first part of the season is going to be, first 6 weeks of the season, I should say, is going to be Premiership Cup. So it's not going to be the Premiership until October, and that means that obviously the other aspect of it is you're going to have a lot of players who are out away on. International duty coming back. What's the injury situation like? I would imagine, I don't think there's going to be that many of our players who are going to be going through to the semi-final or final. So I think we're probably going to be in a slightly better position maybe than other teams in terms of our availability of our better players. But I mean, Loz's point there about the fact that because we don't have relegation is a really important one. Even if we get to Christmas and it's crap, I mean, what really is there to benefit of changing anything mid-season? I think, again, we've got a very, very small number of players in and out. Again, it's a really, really settled squad now. We've got a lot of players who are used to the systems, used to the personnel, used to the club, used to the fans, all these different aspects of it. I think if we're realistic about it, if we get to this time next season and we're in a similar position, I think the calls to replace George Skivington at that point probably would have a bit more credence. Again, I don't know whether that would be the right decision. We've never gone more than 3 seasons without getting rid of a coach. So I don't know. Is
even
is
when we've done well?
I think that would be the thing, though, for me, Ed, is like by then, if we're in that situation, it's hard to say we're on a journey and we're improving, because if we're 10th or 9th next season, that's 3 out of 4, isn't it? That's it, the end of the day. And I appreciate what Loz says, being on a journey is fine, but you can't plateau like that and not show some signs of progress. So not I think the, it's that, isn't yeah, it? That's
not
where
with
he's
what
be.
The club have got. I mean, that's the thing. I have sympathy when you have the injuries that we've had this season. I think, again, a number of people have commented about the fact that the injuries isn't really an excuse and all the rest of it. I agree. I don't think you can use the injuries as an excuse for finishing 10th, but I think you can certainly understand that has put pressure on a squad that's quite thin anyway. And if your coaching setup is thin and therefore you aren't able to change things as much as you want, the injuries are going to have an impact. But if you look at elsewhere, you know, look at the other clubs in the Premiership and you look at what Gloucester have got in terms of facilities, in terms of the crowd base, the fan base, the revenue that you can bring in from it, we are should be in a relatively strong position. We shouldn't be finishing 9th, 10th, 8th on a regular basis. We should be higher. This is a fundamental issue within the club that needs to be resolved. Russ, you've mentioned this before. It isn't going to be an easy fix, but I think, Jim, I don't know about you, you've got to try and be hopeful about it. I mean, the whole point about this podcast is it's jam tomorrow.
I mean, we are full of hope, and that is what is slowly killing us.
Yeah. Do you think, so going into next season, we think if we can go into next season, we've got, touch wood, a full roster of players, no one injured, we come out of the World Cup and everyone's fit and raring to go. Would you, and you know, we can keep those players fit throughout the season. Would you feel confident with the coaching side, with the coaching team we've got in place, that it's going to be a better season than this season?
I think the La Rochelle game absolutely showed that if we are adventurous enough, we can be an exceptionally good team. And maybe that isn't the way we played in that game, wasn't how the coaching setup and the organisation had planned for the season. I sincerely hope that in pre-season and early season, that is how they choose to try and play. And I think we will really, really scare teams if we play like that. Mm. And we'll win more than we lose. And you definitely can't say that about this season.
No.
I mean, the one thing you would say as well is a lot of the players we've signed are very like for like almost, aren't they? You've got Mercer in, Pledry Morgan out, 12 Trees out, Llewellyn in. So they're very like for like players, but you would hope they're players on that upward curve. No disrespect to Billy. You know, he's at the end of his journey as a career, isn't he? He's not got the potential of the likes of Llewellyn, who looks very good. So you've got that. You've also got the young lads like Atkinson, who have stepped up now. You've now got a viable alternative to Mark Atkinson at inside centre, who can come on and do a job. So you would hope that if we're looking for some hope, there's hopefully those players who've come through have got blooded. They've got a lot more experience. They know what it's all about. That's a positive. Our depth at hooker is fucking terrifying now, isn't it? So that will be interesting next year. What happens there? How do you keep those guys happy?
Funny enough, so there was a rumor I think I saw today that Henry Walker is apparently off to Ealing. That's the rumor.
Are they not signing any of our players, just to be clear at this point? Because it's hard to. I dislike Ealing a lot. I think I've made that clear. It's now like they're now the next team to have our hand-me-downs, aren't they?
Well, I mean, the issue being is if you're a squad, you know, where are these players going to play? I think 12 Trees, as you said, is a player that's coming to the end of his career, so that makes sense. I think Jordy Reed, he's obviously played there before. He's
not quite up to the standard we need.
No, he's.
Well,
yeah, I think we. Yeah. You know, I know he's a fan favorite.
The same you could say with Henry Walker. He's been come through our youth system. Yeah. He's never really been considered a starter, and he's gonna be in his mid-20s now.
And I mean,
24, 25 years.
He's right, yeah, Seb Blake is not, you know, come in, you yeah. know, and is younger.
Whoever has been in charge has signed a hooker ahead of Henry Walker since he's been at the club. Yeah. I appreciate he's had to develop, and I don't want to say nasty about him, and it's not being critical. It's just, unfortunately, some players aren't quite there. And you're saying the rumour is he's dropping down to the Championship as well. So it tells you what you need to know, potentially, as well, about him. He might not just be quite that quality, unfortunately. It happens.
But it happens, doesn't it? And, it's got to be like that now, hasn't it? It's a professional sport. And, you know...
And we got the depth that we can get rid of someone who
exactly,
isn't quite doing it now. And I mean, certainly a hooker, anyway.
And let's be honest, he's come up against the same players Seb Blake has, and Seb Blake has just taken an opportunity and run with it, hasn't he? You know, no one is wishing those injuries on anyone, but he's taken that chance so well, hasn't he? To the point, I was almost disappointed that he was straight out when McGuigan was back. I almost felt like he deserved to keep that shirt to the end of the season, but I do understand where the club come from, you know, they're paying McGuigan.
Yeah, but you've also got the element as well, the fact that, you know, there was literally no one else who was playing. Yeah, so he was playing 80 minutes.
I get that, Ed. He's probably knackered. Yeah, he's probably, he needs
a lot for a, it's a lot for a young guy. Yeah. You know, that it's a step up. There's two bits of it, really. There's the step up emotionally and the step up physically, isn't there?
It'd be just like us to have broken him, wouldn't it, if we'd have kept him playing. So, why risk it? I do get that.
He's played all those minutes because Henry Walker, unfortunately, hasn't been the standard we needed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's a briefer.
I'm not being funny. He would have played. We had an injury crisis at hooker, and he's still not starting.
No. But
and it's not just the two Sebs, is it? There's people like Cam Jordan's had a lot of game time, looked very good, very promising. Back row were blessed anyway, but there's been a lot of good back rowers come in and step up. So you just hope that the squad has not always felt the strongest. I agree with what you said, Ed, but it does feel like there's been chances for that squad to get some game time and opportunities, and hopefully we're getting a better idea of, like lots of same people like Henry Walker, you're getting a better understanding of who's up to it, who isn't now, hopefully. Yeah.
We'll do a little bit, actually. We might as well just talk about sort of players and where we think. If we do a mini season review of the first part of the season, I think certainly the first couple of weeks, I think we won four out of our first five games. You know, that start of the season, but at the same time, even then we were saying, look, it's a really good start to the season. We don't feel we're playing a lot of rugby at this point. I think, ironically, the Saracens game was the one game we thought, bloody hell, this is really good, and we lost.
That's the one game which I think really, it went, we may have won games after that.
I think we won a game immediately.
But it was almost as though that was the one which actually was the start of it. In fact, to me, losing that game that we should have won, we might have won games after, but that was a game we should have won. That was a statement game, and I think our season's completely different if we win that game.
I agree, Lars.
Because we go to a team, one of the best teams in Europe, and we take them on their own patch, get a bonus point win, comfortable win, and potentially stop them from getting a bonus point, and that would have been a real statement performance. The Saracens would still have finished probably top of the league, but I think we would have been top four with them then.
I agree. I remember the messages at the time. I think some people weren't able to watch it straight away, and I remember getting caught up in it. I was like, get it on. Oh my God, we're pulling away. We're going to pull away. And then quite rightly, a few of you reminded me of who I support. But do you know what I mean? That game, to me, does not just encapsulate this season. It encapsulates a lot of my worries about Gloucester and those wider issues and going back to the coaching. Any other team, you're like, my God, we're going to pump. We've gone to Saracens, five point win. They've got nothing.
We don't seem to have that ability.
I agree, so, Jim.
Just, game, mate. So,
just to keep the pressure on. I think it's a very hard mental job to do. To when you're 20 points up, to keep that pressure on and to keep trying as hard as you were when it was all square or when you were, you know, point
that not many other teams would have exploded in the way that we did. I don't think any of us felt confident, and it felt written in the stars. And it's just one of those ones, just like you say, Loz, if we won that game, we're probably pushing for top four, because you build your season around that result, and it just went the other way, didn't it? And I like you said, Ed, I felt it was, we were copping quite a lot of flack as a pod, I think, for being so negative, because we saw, I don't want to see this. I did not see 10th coming, I'll be honest.
I think we all thought maybe we might miss on the playoffs because we're not quite hitting. But then
who saw the likes of Irish? Where did Irish finish? Fifth,
yeah.
I mean, who saw that coming?
It's been a weird season.
How are they fifth and we're 10th?
Because they won more games than us.
Well, yes.
A lot more.
I don't mean to be glib, but...
It's bonkers, isn't it? Because, and I'll tell you what, I think last season, Irish probably weren't a lot different than they are now. But
no, but...
They were winning games that they were losing by a couple of points. And they,
I think it comes down to the... And this is where I think the intent to play comes from. Where I think at times... And a Saracens game is a really good example of this. We got into a lead playing really attractive, very exciting, and aggressive rugby.
It was some very good tries.
That's the thing. You don't have to play like Barbar's attacking rugby. What we need is
exactly.
You need aggressive rugby. It's a very big difference here. And I think the thing for me was that in that Saracens game, we got into a lead. And I understand this. You kind of then think, well, we've got a lead. We're going to play a little bit more conservatively now because we can control the time, possession, territory. But Saracens are a winning side. They play with they can step it up and turn on the aggression. And that's what made the difference. They just played far more aggressively. We couldn't match it. And every time this season where we've got into positions where we've looked in control, we've looked like we're in a, we're playing really decent rugby. It's as if someone, that there's that thing in the brain where they've gone, okay, this is what we've got to go play this really conservative style, box kick, almost absorb everything. That'll help us win. Rather than if we just kept playing that aggressive brand of rugby, you're going to win can't cope with it.
That comes from confidence and I don't think a good leadership and having the balls to believe in yourself, which is something we don't have historically. We've lacked that because we are not that team, are we? And I think that's the thing. The one that always reminds me of that is when Harlequins beat Exeter in the final, because everyone was going, they can't play rugby like this the whole game. And they bloody did. They just did not let up. And they're like, this
is what
brought
us here. I think in a one-off game or a playoff situation, you've got a bit more freedom because you've got to look at the whole season.
And that's the La Rochelle game, isn't it, for us? We had, it's an extreme and you have to find the middle. And I think the Saris game is the same. You have to respect your opposition and your opponents. You have to respect what they're about. But equally, at the same time, you have to go, that's great that you've done all that to all of us. But that's where you need someone to go, that's not happening to us today, boys. Keep going. But make the right decision. Do you know what I mean? It's a balance, isn't it? If you too much, you let them back in the game and their confidence is up there right at the top and ours isn't. That's what they didn't believe for a second. They were losing that game and we did nothing to put that element of doubt into them.
One of the problems we got is for as good as our pack can go and our scrum can be, they said until we gave away a penalty against Bristol on Saturday afternoon that we had the best scrum in the league and we hadn't been penalised, I think, it was all season. Our line eight has been going quite well, and that's proven by the rolling mauls. So we can, once our maul gets going, it's very, very difficult to stop it, and they reckon it's the best in the league. Now, for as good as that means, I don't think we've not got a dominant pack, despite what I've just said there. Not like some. And one thing that certainly we don't have is a nasty bastard pack. We've always had that from 2000. We've touched this. I think we probably touched on this about the same time last season, going back to what we said about 2003 when we had the likes of Olivier Azam in the pack. You had Patrice Calaza was in the squad. Yeah, you had players. Junior Paramore, which were not going to be bullied. They'd not take a backward step. Phil Vickery. And we had a... they weren't nasty as in they'd go around and they'd the dirty tactics, but they were nasty as a pack to play against. You did not enjoy, yeah. Teams did not like playing against our pack, right? Years before that in the amateur game, we always had that for various reasons. The old King's Own Kiss and things like that, you know. It was, but our pack bullied us the other week. I appreciate that we've had injuries, but that a couple of years ago then, not like a couple of, we were being raved about because we had injuries, players were coming in, we carried on, Roland Moore still went the same, still went great. We were on TV for the Premiership Cup with all our kids playing, and we took on a team which was, I forget who we played, but we beat them, or certainly ran them very close. I think it might be Worcester's first team or something like that. And we ran them very close if we didn't beat them. There was a game I thought earlier in the season we beat a team we shouldn't have done with our kids. And the reason being is they were training with the first team. So it was, and they said it's because we have to defend against that roller ball all the time. And then they set up, they want to defend against it. And it was all going well. And they was just saying, Christ, there's this conveyor belt of players coming through. Where's it gone wrong? Because yeah, well, like that you anymore.
Nasty
so
players,
to, use the in- to use the injuries as an excuse for me doesn't really work because of the fact that we've had those players come through in the past to be able to step up. And they're not stepping up at the moment.
I think,
you mentioned those nasty players, Lawrence. I'd say the likes of Jim Hamilton. Right, someone that actually it's more important that he gets a red card and sets a marker for the season than it is to step down. You know, he's got to be 100% in their faces because that's who he is as a player. And I think maybe not getting red cards, but we need players like that. We need players.
I get the sentiment, Corey.
Your leaders are the people who have the ability to read what's going on in a game and do something to stop that ebb or that flow. And it could be a red card. It could equally be someone who steps up and doesn't have to say anything. They just do something big in the game that turns the tide or you can rally behind. And, you know, that could be, I don't know, Ludlow's done it in the past where he's put a big hit in. We've lacked those moments. And I think another part of the problem is the rolling ball. It started to creak early in the season. And I think teams, unsurprisingly, going, well, what do Gloucester do? They kick to the corner and that maul's really hard to stop. But there must be a way to stop it. And I think that's what frustrated me is if we'd have kept that maul and found ways to evolve it or offer something else out of it. And we did try it later in the season where there were some quick ones off the top and then we'd go out the backs. It was once or twice. Exeter used to just drive. It used to bore the hell out of us, but they evolved their game.
I think there's two aspects to that, Russ. There's certainly the aspect where I think teams worked it out. There's definitely that is obviously going to have an impact. You know, teams have had they've had the summer off. They can review how do Gloucester, you know, and what they'll look at it and go, right, what can we do similar to Gloucester to create a powerful rolling mall? That'll be the first thing. What can we do to mimic it? And secondly, if we can't mimic it, you know, what's the easiest way to stop it? I think that's number one. I think there has been also a look on things like the way that referees view the rolling mall. I think there's been a bit more leniency in terms of allowing defending teams to disrupt the rolling mall a little bit. Yeah, swing around. I think there's a little bit more of that this season. And I think, to be honest, if I'm being brutally honest about this, yes, it was great to have that amazing weapon of a rolling maul. But what I think, if we're genuinely honest about this, rugby fans, what do we want to be watching? We want to be watching really attacking, exciting rugby. We don't want to watch just endless rolling mauls. It's boring as hell. It's not exciting. It's great it's great for a season when you're winning games. But I'd rather see if we're going to go to a forward pack, I'd rather see a pick and drive, going through like 12 phases.
Offload, like half tackle, offload, next big carrier, smash.
And that's what Loz talked about. But even before the likes of Vickery, the Dave Sims era, the Rob Fiddler era, we played good forward rugby. It wasn't boring to watch because it wasn't just kick to the corner more. They were just a hard bunch who, like Jim said, they knew how to play the game. They knew what they were good at and they would have worked around it. And then you had a back line that were good enough to offer something. And I think that's the trouble. And I think that's the problem, Ed, is it does feel like our eggs are just, there's too many eggs in one basket, isn't there? Like, if we finish 10th and played rugby and lost, but at least it's nice, I'll take that. But it's fucking hard to watch when
that's the point that really where I would disagree slightly. I know where you're coming from, and we don't want to just see rolling ball after rolling ball. But if you're dominant in it, the trouble is our entire game is built around it.
Yeah,
that's where our flaw is. If we, when we go, we win a penalty 40 meters out, it's not really kickable because it's in the sort of like in the channel between the 5 and the 15. Kick into the corner, get in, brilliant, win the line, it, get that rolling ball going, boom, smash for a team score, brilliant. Keep doing it, by all means. I have no problem with that. But don't make it literally your entire game plan. Have some other strings to your bow. Just, you know, as you said, Russ, mix it up at times. Unfortunately, the Exeter game was a classic one. They stifled our rolling ball and we had nothing else. Literally nothing. Definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over again and believing that there'd be a different outcome. It wasn't. They worked us out completely and that was it. And that's the frustration with it because, yeah, actually, do you know what? When you watch Rolling Mall week in, week out, and all that's all you do, it is bloody boring. And actually, the pick and go as well, that can be bloody boring as well. That because that was the other part of Exeter's game. What we want is a bit of an all-round, every team to be doing an all-round game, and then you'd have a really exciting product.
And I think the problem with it, and I think we've all said this, and this was just the frustration at the start, you've got a back line that can play. It's exactly. Not like we haven't got the tools there. And we've seen they can. I mean, who has Louis Rees-Sammet on the wing and just go, all you're going to do is chase box kicks? Ollie Fawley has really stepped up. I know we're reviewing the first half, but he has been bloody brilliant to come back at coming in and working hard for it. You've got the players to do what you said, Loz, and mix it up. And you can't do everything perfectly. I get that. And we will make mistakes. But that's the problem with, like you said, Ed, if we just maul and just maul and just maul or box kick, you've got players out. That's where it's frustrating for me is we know these players can do that. And bloody hell, even in the early games, there were a couple where Meehan shaped a box kick and chucked out the back. And I don't mind that. Have a bit of variety.
I bet he got a dressing down for it though, didn't he?
They probably just went, that's your one. That's your one. But just offer some variety because it keeps the other sides guessing as well, doesn't it? And I think, again, good hard rugby. We've scored some good tries just by having a good hard centre line run. Harris has scored some very good tries doing that. It doesn't always have to be offload out the back, reverse switch, you know, all that. You can just play some good hard rugby that gives us that bit of variety. It doesn't feel like there's a lot. It doesn't feel like we're that far away. I think this is where the bloody hope's creeping back in now.
So the first part of the season, I think up until December, we did look there or thereabouts. I think we all had concerns around the lack of a game plan outside of the box kick and the rolling ball. You know, we had that great win. We had a good win against Bordeaux. Got thumped by Leinster, which we all expected. And then what we'll do is next week, we'll talk about the other bit of the season from basically January onwards. We'll get Snowy on that one because I'd like to hear Snowy's good in-depth talk about that. We're going to pause briefly, come back, and we're going to talk about other stuff that's going on in rugby at the moment, specifically, I suppose, around London Irish, and then also some really great successes for Gloucestershire's other teams this weekend.
Hi, this is Adam Hastings, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right, so final bit of the pod this week. Pretty rapid bit because we kind of overdid the first bit of the pod. Apologies. Which is what's been going on around rugby over the last couple of weeks. And again, unfortunately, financially is the financial issues being the main concern. London Irish, were threatening to not play this weekend until they were paid and had insurance sorted, which apparently it was at very last minute. Jim, it's not a good look, is it? It's another team that's in financial, it having financial issues. Apparently there is a takeover, but you've got to question if someone who can't sort out how to pay money into an American from an American bank account, that doesn't bode very, very well, does it?
It's not good. It's not good at all. Clearly we saw this with Worcester for quite a long period of time. They were struggling to pay wages. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it came to a head and the club was no more. But yeah, it's not what you want your players to be worrying about. You want your players to be concentrating on rugby, obviously. And, you know, there's all the chatter about where they're going to be playing. Are they going to be at Brentford? Are they going to be going somewhere else? It does seem to be these teams that don't have a home. I mean, obviously Worcester had a very good home. Mm. It's the clubs that aren't making, you know, all their own money. And it makes me quite confident with Gloucester, I think Gloucester have worked really well through that really horrible COVID period financially, have kept morale and the squad and everything together, and it kind of makes you realize we talked briefly earlier about our squad and about how it's got a good vibe to it. And I do wonder what the vibe's like at somewhere like London Irish. They've had a really good finish to the season, finished fifth, very strong performances. But how is it in the dressing room? You know, are the players as confident about the club as you would want them to be? Because obviously the likes of Hassel Collins has moved on already. They've got some really good talent. And if that talent's worth a few quid, then there's a very good chance they'll move them on to get a bit in transfer fee or to simply offload
the books and
wages.
Go on. Yeah.
Are they going to be taking, I know Newcastle, there was chatter about Newcastle potentially taking voluntary relegation just so that they're in a position to sort of manage their wage bill. Newcastle, I mean, obviously they've got their own stadium, but they don't have any fans in it.
I was just going to say, I think Newcastle do try, at least they try. I get the sense that they quite often talk about things they're trying to do to get fans through the door. I don't think it's a lack of effort.
No.
You're not helped by how tribal it is. You know, they've got on a Saturday, have they? If they're playing at home and Newcastle are at home.
But they've got cheap season ticket. I mean, I think they're the cheapest season ticket in the Premiership, and it's a rugby hotbed up there. This is the thing, you know. There is a lot of rugby played in that part of England, and I do think it. You may see, and I know it's a weird thing to say this, but with Newcastle United's resurgence and likely qualification for their Champions League, etc. Generally, what happens is if you get it up in that area, if you get one team doing well, the other team does tend to pick up a bit of extra support because you kind of
feel good factor.
It's the feel good factor of the region, the city. I'm not saying they're going to get sellouts week in, week out, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of an uptick in fortunes there. What they have got, unfortunately, at Newcastle is a very much reduced squad compared to this season. They've lost a lot of players for next season. Going back to Irish though, I mean it's your point, Jim, about the lack of a home, the lack of a ground that you can generate revenue from, I think is a massive one. I think that is really, really important. And you look at the other sides that don't in the Premiership that don't have a ground of their own, and that's basically Sale, Irish, and then we had Wasps, obviously have gone pop.
They had their own ground, though. The problem was their business model was absolute wank.
Yeah, their business model was fairy dust, wasn't it? But But again, though, it comes back from the fact that they've moved away from their traditional home, their traditional support. They've spent how many years at Wickham building up at least a small pocket of support, and then they bugger off even further away. So, that's I suppose the point. I know you mean about they own their own ground, but
and they slap themselves in a very established rugby area anyway, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, yes. The other thing with that, they've just been flawed business plans all the way along, though, haven't they? I know. We go to Wickham, we build something in Wickham, but instead of calling ourselves Wickham Wasps, we call ourselves
London Wasps. Yeah. Yeah.
When
yeah.
we're not in London. And then they decide to built up something there, then to go, as you said, into a rugby heartland, however you want to word it, hotbed, you know. And yeah, okay, as you said, they had they had their own stand, but ground, but it was just the business plan. Oh, let's, in a time when interest rates are 0.01%, we'll offer a bond which is going to pay 6.5% in a sport which doesn't make any money anyway.
No. Oh, and also not just piss off the local rugby fans and the local other rugby clubs, but massively piss off all the football fans because who you might want to generate a bit of revenue, going bring these guys, lads, maybe bringing them in on Saturday or whatever. No, just really annoy all of them as well. So you've now got a vendetta for most of the city.
I mean, part of the problem with rugby is it's a very traditional fan base, isn't it? People are very set in their ways. Don't like a lot of change. It's very hard if you try and rock the boat. Wasps went way out there, didn't they? That kind of franchise model of, well, we can just move the team as if that's going to happen.
Look what they're going to do. They're going to move the team to Worcester.
I was going to say, you brought that brilliantly on, Loz. So the rumours are that Wasps have applied to play at Six Ways next season. I'm trying to think.
Who saw that coming?
I'm trying to think. Someone mentioned this on that pod. Someone mentioned that on this pod. I'm trying to. Oh, it was me. If I get it right, it's my only prediction that's ever come true.
Just a quick one, though, Ed. What are your thoughts? What did you first think of Mark Atkinson, though? You know, because let's be clear. You can have this one, but you have got a lot wrong.
What, you're cruel?
Yeah. Even a broken clock is right. Twice a day. But no, I knew it was going to happen. It was the most, it was always going to be the most sensible option when both clubs were in financial problems. I mean, I was surprised that Wasps actually went. I had in my head, I thought they would probably just about survive to the end of the season. There was enough goodwill and enough people who probably had a bit of cash to keep them going. And then go to Worcester. That was my sort of thought. But so there's that side of things. So certainly that's another interesting aspect to it. Irish, I hope for everybody's sake, that Irish are able to continue. I don't think it's going to be good at all for rugby. It's not good for rugby in that part of London. You know, I know we've got Quins down there, but they're a very big part of that community. London Irish is a fantastic community club. Russ and I went down there a couple of years ago. It's a fantastic setup. Brentford's a wonderful ground, and it's always been a club that's had a big community feel, and they do a lot of work with young kids. And that part of London is not the I mean, London's an interesting place, but that part of London, it's a very mixed bit. You know, Grenfell's just up the road.
They didn't help themselves either, though, did they, at the end of the day? I know it's been discussed in the past and it tends to be brushed over now, but they had Guinness as their sponsor.
Paddy Jackson.
A year,
yeah.
And then they go and pay Paddy Jackson £500,000 a year and lose all their sponsorship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's no wonder they're financially struggling, because no one wants to touch them, because regardless of how good a player he is of questionable morals.
Yeah, there is certainly you're being tarnished by association on the reputation front there. And I think, exactly. I don't disagree with that.
Financially, the only reason we've heard of London Irish being financially struggling now has been since they've signed him. They've lost their big sponsors. Yes, they've got other sponsors, but I bet you they don't pay them anywhere near as much as what Guinness were willing to pay.
No. And you know, at the end of the day, you're right, Loz. There are still question marks, and I think there are plenty of people that are still have an antipathy towards London Irish because of the Paddy Jackson situation.
Exactly.
I think it's difficult for fans to continue keep banging that drum because other things take precedent, but you know, it's yeah, it's still not a good look, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
The other aspect we should talk about, of course, is the last couple of weekends. Obviously, we mentioned that Jersey won the championship, which was really good news for them.
Really funny as well.
Really funny because obviously Ealing didn't. Yeah. I've noticed again that there are people banging the drum about promotion and relegation. But if I could highlight an article to read this weekend, if you get a chance to it, so there's an article in the Telegraph by Brian Moore talking about promotion and relegation. And actually, yes, it would be great if we could have it, but having clubs that can only get less than 3,000 people through the door isn't going to improve the situation. It's a really good article. It's well thought out. Brian Moore obviously is very intelligent chap and always worth listening to. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but I do think he's an interesting chap to listen to and read. So that'll be my pick of the articles this weekend. But Jim, you and I were in Long Leven's Rugby Club on Saturday while yep. trying to watch the Gloucester game, but it got turned off after 60 minutes, thankfully, because it was crap. And also they couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work properly. So we ended up watching the fantastic victory for Long Leven's against Twickenham in the Papa John Plate Southwest. I don't know what it was, but anyway, they won, which is really good.
Southwest won North
something.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it was. Hang on. I appreciate you don't know what it's called, but is it going to be Southwest if they're playing Twickenham?
I don't bloody know. It was. No, they won.
Who knows how National won South.
Yes.
There's no point trying to understand these systems, is there? We all played in a merit table system, which was batshit crazy. Come on, it could. The areas mean nothing, Loz, no. do they?
No.
Fair point.
But no, congratulations to Long Levens. I mean, we all have a slight soft spot for them in the fact that they were the home of Doughty when we played for Doughty. So we know a few of the guys and the people who are involved at the club. They're a great local club. They've contributed to Gloucester in a number of ways in terms of players and Jim obviously does coaching there with for his young boy. So that was great to see. Bream won as well in their final. Apparently there were some issues in the stands that delayed that game. Apparently,
yeah,
I'm not
just
aware
some,
of
just some heavy conversations.
Yeah, I'm not aware of who was fighting, but apparently some of the supporters were fighting. I don't know if they were Bream supporters or not. If anyone was there and they can enlighten us, please let us know. It's not a good look, no matter who it was. Gloucester Old Boys, unfortunately, didn't win down at Twickenham. Lost to Bristol North, I think it wasn't it? North Bristol. And I think, was it Old Pats lost as well in their game? But overall, you know, great.
Last Sunday as well. Don't forget last Sunday.
Oh yes, and of course, yes, a double win for Cheltenham Tigers ladies at Twickenham, which was absolutely brilliant. I have to be honest. I was getting some strange looks on a rooftop bar in Prague when I saw our mate Jess Yates running onto the pitch at the end, going, "Oh, that's a good win." So, but yeah, it was brilliant to see two local. Well, so many local teams being so successful. It's just a shame that the main one isn't.
big finals. Obviously, we had the Combination Cup.
Yes, you went to that, Jim. I mean, I'll be honest, considering how much beer we drank on Saturday, I was amazed you could still operate, but then it is you, Jim, so.
Yeah. I mean, the bar didn't open until midday, and obviously the first game kicked off at 11, so that was a bit of an issue. I had to wait
an issue. I'm sure your liver was happy.
Yeah, no, it was cracking. The sun was out, so I decided to drink the Stouffer's. Yeah,
it was nice yesterday, wasn't it?
It was a really lovely day. I was in shorts and T-shirt. In fact, I walked home at about 11 o'clock yesterday evening, still in my shorts and T-shirt and still comfortable. It was a cracking day. It just would have been nicer if the North Gloucester combination had sorted out what was happening with regards the Long Leven's first.
They have now, haven't they? It's been
they moved, have now, but the fact that it was probably going to happen weeks and weeks ago, they could have maybe had a little bit of foresight.
It's not a good look for player welfare, is it? Again,
it's not a good look for player welfare, and you have to wonder if they'd have done that, would the games have kicked off at 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock, or would they have shifted them back a little bit? Getting tickets was a nightmare. Like, we arrived at about 20 to 11, and we sat down a couple of minutes before kickoff. Like the queue was out. The queue was out the ground, like from the ticket office, out past the shop, past the turnstiles. It was a long queue. You couldn't buy tickets online, and so that was a bit of a pain. And I think maybe if they'd have advertised the fact, 750 a ticket as well, and that was for kids. So it cost 30 quid for like two adults, two kids. And I think that's a bit steep, to be honest. I'll be interested to see if my ticket gets me in on Friday night for the rescheduled Long Levens game, because it was supposed to cover that game.
Yeah.
Or whether they're going to try and charge me another 7.5 quid.
Well, to be fair, though, that was an interesting conversation we had in the in Long Levens, actually, wasn't it? The fact that there was rumours or there was a potential that they were looking at maybe moving it to next season and having it as a warm-up game ahead of
I think that would have been brilliant. That would have been brilliant for the players involved, because they would have
played get a crowd.
In front of, you know, maybe 5,000 people rather than, you know, I don't know, what was the crowd, 500? So that's going to be fantastic. I think the issues, obviously, are the current squad want to play it now because they're currently quite good, having just won a final. And, you know, Mattson are equally, you know, having a successful season. If you play it next season, kind of at the end of pre-season, then you're not, potentially not even the same players. You might have player movement.
I think
they're not going to be in the same state.
I think it loses something. I've got a lot. I really like the Combination Cup. Some of my favourite times playing, even in like the Glanville, the lower, you know, the group one we were in. One of my favourite games is when Doughty's finally won one after 10 years of trying, like just getting through a round.
Nobody expected that, did they?
No.
That was Loz's single greatest sporting moment there, I think.
It's funny because anyway, you ask us both this, because I remember it, so quick segue. We scored a try. I was captain and I remember being, because we were two tries down. And all I can remember is saying...
He tries saying with 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, I remember saying to the ref, is there time for the restart? And I just remember he's saying yes. And I remember coming down and I think my team talk was as inspiring as ever. It was like, lads, just get the bloody ball. Don't knock it on. What did we do? We lost it.
But then they cheated to get it. Me and Russ just looked at each other and basically went, sod it. Offside. Put pressure on their scrub half. He somehow managed.
I've never seen anyone shank. They literally had to kick it. They literally had to kick it dead, and he somehow bodged it up. But the next moment is. The next moment is funny because you were here two very different sides. I remember Loz caught it. I was behind him. I was nowhere. I was keeping up with play. And I remember all in my head was like, please pass it, Loz. Please pass it. Please pass it. And then it was that horrible moment when he passed it. It was like, oh God, let it be
please
somebody.
Catch it. Please catch
let it.
Let it
be someone who can catch it. And I just remember it being the moment of it being George Bingle, who was probably one of the best players in the team, and the sheer relief that it was him, because he still had a lot of work to do. But it was
had to run in from the 22 with a fullback coach.
But I think, you know, it was an amazing moment because Hucklecoat, they told us they were bringing their dream team. They thought they were going to walk it. And you could hear a pin drop, because to be fair to them, they brought a load of people. And we had like one man and his dog watching. And the whole point of this is not to big us up. It's how much that competition means. So I get why
The crowds are fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great local competition. I'm so glad Lev stood their ground and said, look, player welfare, we're not playing it. But I'm glad it's resolved so that it can go ahead this year, because it means a lot to those players. Because it did us. That was a first round, you know, it was a meaningless game in a lot of ways, but it meant a lot to us. And
so I think it's one of the, Jim mentioned it a little bit as well, and we've talked about this. Rugby has a lot of issues, and there are, but equally rugby's got so much that it can be proud of and it can work with. I think the bigger issue with, for say, Combi Cup here is, it's a wonderful competition. It's well loved by the rugby community in Gloucester. It's well loved by the players. The clubs adore it. And, you know, there's plenty of people who've played this competition and really, really enjoy it. And what I find quite frustrating is this should be, outside of Gloucester rugby, this should be the showpiece event of the season at King's Home. You know, if we taking away sort of any, you know, international stuff or the Navy, Army,
and it should be promoted.
and promote it as such. This should be something that basically, I would argue, this should be included in every single season ticket, Gloucester Rugby
Agreed.
Season ticket holders. It should be a little nice little bolt-on. You know, it's not going to, you're not going to get 12,000 people coming down to it. But if you can get 1,000 or 2,000 Gloucester fans who go, do you know what? It's an extra game I can go to, an extra a day of rugby I can go and watch at King's Home. Go down with my mates and we'll sit down and have a few ciders or beers or whatever. I think that would be a really good thing for the club to be involved in, because the club aren't going to, they're not going to care. They're going to get the people through the door and they're going to get people buying beers and maybe buying merchandise and also if you come down on a Combi Gut game and you can bring your kid down and go, oh, do you want to come to a Gloucester game next season? You know, all these things.
Yeah, so last year I took, because it was immediately after our end of season awards at Longlevens. And we didn't have our thirds in the first game, but we had our seconds and firsts in the finals. So timing wise, it was perfect because the 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock kickoffs. So we all left our awards, got straight down to King's Home, and I was really surprised that a good few of the parents said they'd never been to King's Home before, and the one of them said they'd never seen, other than watching their kids play, they'd never watched a rugby match before, and they were really, really impressed with like the standard and the atmosphere and the stadium and everything. And they were, you know, all signed up for coming along to a Gloucester match, the following now this season. So it does sell rugby as a spectacle. And I think, you know, it should be something. I mean, I was quite surprised there weren't that many kids there, like from the different clubs. There were a few. I had a few of my boys there. There were a few of the Gordon League team, same age group, but not a huge amount. And like you say, Ed, it would be brilliant if this was billed as the kind of big end of season kind of bash, if you like, for the whole of Gloucester. So all the clubs, they all come down. People that aren't interested in local rugby that much, they're interested in Gloucester rugby, they've got their season ticket, they still come down because it's included in the season ticket. And I think it would be a really, really good opportunity, a bit like the Sevens tournaments that, you know, Ben Morgan's hosting. It's one of those all-day events, which is just great. And you can come and go. And you go, oh, do you know what? I'm not too bothered about this second game. I'm going to disappear into town. I'm going to get some food and I'm going to come back for the other game. And it just creates that really nice atmosphere that, you know, that I think Gloucester should be proud of, because there's not a lot of places that have, you know, over 100 years of this sort of history.
No, I genuinely think it's something that should be looked into. I'm sure the club probably are looking into it. There's probably all sorts of things about rights and what they can do. But it seems the most basic sort of stuff. You just add these little things in. Season ticket holders are going to appreciate it. The players, if they get to play in front of 3,000-4,000 people rather than 500, it's a different experience. And I think that, you know, it leads that whole thing about Gloucester being the heart of the community, the rugby community. You know,
you could even throw in a couple of age group games. I know that they want the players to be able to get on the pitch and do warm-ups and stuff. Potentially, could you have both teams doing their warm-up on half the pitch, so the other half was still available and you had some junior rugby, you know, some junior final, if you like, taking place on the pitch in that significant hour in between the games? Because that would just add another element. If it's just constant stuff, you know, going on the pitch, a bit like a Sevens sort of tournament, that'd be brilliant.
The thing is, you're getting less and less of your value for money for your season ticket, and it's not dropping in price. And if there's something which is already arranged and is going to happen, for it to be involved in the season ticket as part of the package just seems like a no-brainer for me. Yeah. We get the year, you had 12 home matches. No, sorry, we had 11 home matches, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was a 12-team league. Okay, it went up to 13 and we were going to get an extra game They weren't going to charge any more for it, so fair enough. Okay, that way. But that look how well that went. It didn't even last bloody a month of the season, and two teams had folded. So you ended up with one less game, but they didn't offer a refund. Now the prices, I can't, have they froze prices or put
they
them
froze
up?
They froze prices. Frozen. But you, but
there's,
I mean,
talk of there could be one game less again next season.
No,
then.
So I
if
think
we go to
next,
a 10-team Premiership.
Yeah. So next season, I believe we actually end up with more games because of the Premiership Cup and the rejigging of that. So we will get we go up. I think we do a go up again next season.
You know, figure out about the A League as well. So some of these big squads of players
again. This is another issue that needs looking at. Brian Moore mentioned it in his article again, which is the fact that age group rugby, they don't get enough games. You know, age group rugby don't get enough games, and then secondly, the second team don't get enough games. I think the issue you probably have got actually almost now is that because of the way the salary cap has dropped, the A League is less important because the squads are smaller, but what is more important is giving the age group players ability to play at a higher level and play that. So that it's a difficult
it's a real,
one.
I think with the A, like you say that, Ed, with those younger players, because we obviously had it, didn't we? There's a couple of injuries in the squad, and then all of a sudden this lad who wasn't expecting to play much rugby is all of a sudden playing a lot. Well, if they haven't played any rugby of significance for months and months and months, and then they're expected to be thrown into a starting berth in a Premiership team, then that's a massive step up, and it takes a good few weeks just to get back up to match fitness.
I mean, we
whereas
had
if they're playing A-League, at least they're getting their bodies battered a bit and they're match fit.
We had it, didn't we? I appreciate it was during the COVID time, but we put a side out for the slaughter against Exeter away, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of flack saying, well, these guys haven't played much rugby, and I think Skiffs, well, when can they? And you know, we had to rotate the squad at the time because I think we had a lot of
it was two games a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but it's absurd, isn't it? Because you're asking people, it's not like football. You can't not play rugby and then suddenly play a load of games because your body is not used to that physical impact and the repetition of it. So I get what you're saying, Jim. It's really important that they have this opportunity to play, because otherwise it's really hard to go from playing no rugby to suddenly being like, right, you're in a Premiership team, step up, here's your time to shine. No, I haven't played for 12 weeks. It's it's a really hard situation.
And then it's just value. You know, it offers a season ticket holder more value. It gives the likes of Freeman's, you know, more burgers sold and pints sold and all the rest of it. So that's all good. I have got to pick you up a little bit, Lars. You said that there was no refund. I do think that we got the England-Italy under-20s game as a replacement for the cancelled match.
Okay. Yeah, all right, fair enough. I don't want to. I didn't have a season to go.
But yeah, it's that wasn't carrying the same value as a Premiership game.
But having A-League and stuff is a good entry. I know people have said this into watching the Gloucester game. So when I first started watching, that's when my dad took me along. I think way back in the day, it was free entry. And he was like, I'm going to bring you along. See how you get along with this. If you enjoy this, I'll start taking you to proper games where I have to pay for
it. It's a big investment to take your kids to a blooming Premiership game.
Even back,
it's a quid for kids or something.
Even back in those days, this was back in the days when the tum pen didn't exist. And if I got bored, he'd send me off to play tag over there. But do you know what I mean? It's still like a way of knowing if you're interested in it. And it doesn't have to be free, but you can chuck vouchers out. You can get local rugby clubs to go along. There are ways you can fill a stadium if you're clever and just see it as a long-term investment. We're not going to get anything financially from them this time, but hopefully in the long run, they might buy a season ticket.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, I think it's been good pod this, bearing in mind it was miserable and horrible at the beginning. But no, thank you very much, guys. We're going to be back next week. There's obviously
for the miserable and horrible part two review.
Part two bit. There will be some rugby to talk about. And then we'll be, we've got a guest, fingers crossed. I can't reveal anything just yet because we just need to absolutely dot the I's and cross the T's. But we have got somebody who will be coming on the pod soon, which I'm sure everyone will be really, really interested in hearing from. I think Jim might even be able to join me on that one.
You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, to it quite well. Interesting. Yeah, good, interesting. Anyway, so hopefully we'll have that lined up in the next couple of weeks as well. But thank you very much, guys. Thanks for your time. and speak again soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.